Welcome to Enterprise Radio, the signature show of the Enterprise Podcast Network, featuring some of the most prominent business professionals in the world today. And now your host, Eric Dye.
This is Eric Dye, and thanks for tuning in once again to Enterprise Radio here on EPN. If you're not already connected with us on our various social media outlets, we invite you to do so by following us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, all at ePodcast Network. Today we're visiting with Mr. Lynn Lesh, who founded and directed his own democratically run school for children ages 6 to 14 for 12 years, one that received widespread attention in the Chicago area as a unique approach to education. His newest book is Intelligence in the Digital Age, How the Search for Something Larger May Be Imperiled. And Mr. Lesh, thanks for joining us here today on Enterprise Radio.
Sure, happy to.
Yeah, certainly appreciate your time. Looking forward to hearing from you today. So, for starters, how might the internet and people's current use of digital devices adversely impact one's search for an expansive consciousness?
Well, there's four different things that I think about. One is it takes our natural stream of thoughts, which tends to flow naturally towards some area, and you know, it's being assimilated into how the internet works in this sort of jumpy, distracted way where it goes from one place to another very quickly. So our thought processes, rather than moving in a steady stream, are becoming much more jumpy and fragmented as they're becoming part of the algorithms and the coding inside our devices. As far as our memories, we're really, outsourcing our memories to search sites like Google, which are becoming sort of our brain's external hard drive. So rather than go back and fish memories out of our own thoughts and go through our own neuronal networks to fish these out, we simply go to Google and, you know, get some piece of information. As a consequence of that, we're not going back and fishing the memories out of our own networks of thought, which are then going to calcify over time because they're not being used. And we're also not getting to see how our thoughts affect memory, how memory can be a more illusory process than we think, created by our thoughts. And there's also this issue of we're getting so much information flooded into our short-term memories that a lot of times it just can't keep up with that, where it can then pass those memories on to our long-term memories, which is what we use to think intelligently and also to focus and to attend and to decide what's relevant and what's not so relevant in our lives as far as what we've just apprehended. And there's also this issue of when people are looking into a plastic screen much of the day and focusing on virtual images, those images don't ever have the same sort of emotive or sensorial depth as experiences in the real world. So I just worry that people are being habituated toward a shallower way of dealing with their world because they're focusing on the virtual images inside the plastic screen in lieu of experiences in the real world. And I worry that same sort of shallowness might actually be carried over to their experiences in the real world. So those are my main concerns as far as what the internet is doing to us. And as far as the general thesis of the book, how these things might affect the search for a larger awareness, the irony of that, one really has to have, before one can explore if there is actually an awareness on the other side of thought and memory, one has to first have full access to their thoughts and their memories and their ability to attend and even their emotive life, so they can, they can have the power of direct insight into looking into their world. So I'm concerned about that, both in terms of how the internet might be affecting people generally, and also how it might be affecting those few people who are interested in searching for some sort of larger awareness that, you know, metaphysical seekers have thought over the ages.
Certainly do appreciate your input there, and really a great place and a great way to kick things off here today. Now, what are the potential negative effects which people's use of digital devices might have on their attention spans, working memories, and thought processes? I'd love to hear your take on that as well.
Well, their attention spans, when we go to the the computer, and there's so much information that we're trying to take into our short-term memories in a very short period of time. It becomes like water that's being poured into a glass that it just can't take in any more water. And then when those short-term memories can't absorb any more information, they can't pass that on to our working long-term memory, which can then absorb those things, see them in context, and you know, focus on the world. That's how we attend with our long-term memories. We decide what's important to pay attention to, what's not. So that's that flood of short-term memories is having a profound effect, I think, eventually on our ability to attend and our long-term memories. Our working memories, we're really, you know, Google is more and more becoming our brain's external hard drive. We just go to Google when we can't remember something, whereas before we would kind of try to retrace that memory in our own minds. We'd go back through our own thoughts to where we might have first come in contact with it. So I think, unfortunately, those networks in our brains that lead towards certain memories, they're starting to calcify and dry up simply because they're not being used. We're just simply going to Google, and then rather than trying to fish those things out of our thoughts and our working memories. And I think, and this has to do with one of the larger thesis of the book, is that it's really important to see what the relationship is between thought and memory. Our thoughts are constantly changing our memories over time. So I would say those two things, you know, short-term memory related to attention span and the use of Google as our brain's external hard drive, pretty much.
I'd have to say you are 110% correct on your perspective on that, for sure. Now, how might people's use of digital devices as well be affecting their capacity for direct insight, something which is essential to developing an expanded awareness?
Yeah, I think one thing, there's two things that are really important for direct insight. Is one is that your mind has to be quiet. You know, you're not going to be able to think your way into those aha moments where you see something very clearly. And then also you have to, your emotive life, you know, your sensorial, your emotive life, how you feel things has to be operating optimally. And as far as a quiet mind, I think what helps more than anything for people to develop a quiet mind is when they start seeing what the limitations of thought and memory are, that your thoughts, your memories aren't going to give you the sort of security that you think they will. And so, you know, when you see that, you stop running around inside your mind trying to get security through your thoughts or freedom from fear. And then when that begins to happen, I think people's minds begin to quiet down. And once a person has a quiet mind, they can see things much more clearly. And there can be those aha moments of you can see something that's beyond the power of thought to understand.
Certainly has been informative so far today. We are joined by Lynn Lesh, the author of his newest book, Intelligence in the Digital Age, How the Search for Something Larger May Be Imperiled. And he's joined us here today on Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Now, continuing on, what are the potential negative effects which the digital addiction taking place in people today might be engendering?
Yeah, well, it's just, you know, it's just the internet. It's just, in a way, it's kind of the perfect, you know, interactive, immediate machine for that, because it's so immediate. As far as social media, people want to get the immediate sort of the like icon, you know, that they're interested in. And also the part of this addiction, people are getting used to wanting to feed this addiction. They want to go to information and knowledge that confirms their own values, their own ideas, so they can get that little agreement, that little like or whatever from somebody else. And so they just tend to go very quickly to what will confirm their own sort of worldview, rather than spend time looking around for what might be, you know, what might be a more open-handed approach to things. It's just that people want that sort of confirmation from other people that their worldview confirms with theirs. And there's also, this is still something that has to be studied quite a bit, but there's studies that are showing that when people get into heavy internet use, that the neurotransmitter dopamine starts to flood pleasure centers in the brain. So when that happens, people, in order to get that sort of digital fix, if you will, they want more and more information that confirms what they're interested in or what their worldview is. So they're going to go there and the whole addictive knot gets pulled even tighter. But there's more and more evidence that internet addiction is tied into release of dopamine into the brain. And also, there have been studies that have shown how internet addiction is similar to OCD. People have obsessive compulsive disorder. So this is something that's being studied right now, just how the brain, you know, physiologically reacts to this, you know, addictive impulse to be online.
Another question for you, Mr. Lesh. Why is it so important that people have full access to their working memories, attention spans, and thought processes in seeking a larger, more insightful consciousness?
Well, that's an excellent question, because I think, you know, if the way to have a larger consciousness is to have a quiet mind. You can't think your way into this larger sort of awareness conscious. Your mind has to quiet down. But in order for your mind to quiet down, you have to see what the limitations of thought are. Like I said, your thoughts are never going to provide you the sort of ultimate security or freedom from fear. And then, but in order for that to happen, you first have to have access to those same thoughts to realize that. And as far as our memories, you know, it's the same thing with our memory. When people realize that their memories related to their thoughts aren't going to provide them with the security that they need, they stop going to those thoughts and memories as much to provide that security. And when they stop realizing that they won't get the security they're looking for through this endless stream of thoughts that, you know, they try to follow every day in their mind, then their mind starts to quiet down. And when somebody has a quiet mind, then they can see what might be on the other side of that. Now, to try to describe what that larger awareness is would be silly, because I think it's something that naturally exists beyond thoughts and words. But it's mainly a matter of understanding what the limitations of thought and memory are, so that your mind will quiet down as a result of that.
Mr. Lesh, really appreciate your insight and perspective here in all regards, and really appreciate all the information shared here today as well. In conclusion, what are the potential negative effects of our current internet age on people's apprehension of great art and literature?
Oh, yeah, well, that's, you know, the thing about that is, if you're going to read, say you want to read Crime and Punishment by Dostoevsky, if you've, like, inculcated a sort of jumpy, distracted awareness through use of the internet, how are you going to go through that whole book, the incredible depth that it is and the size of it and everything? If you haven't, you know, if you can't follow the stream of your thoughts, you know, really well. And as far as more physical art, if you're used to the looking at virtual images on a plastic screen much of the day, like I said, your emotive life is going to be somewhat dulled. And so if that happens, will you be able to look at a Monet painting or listen to one of Bob Dylan's long songs or whatever, and still, you know, stay in contact with it if you don't have the same degree of emotional sensorial depth that you once had coming from looking at virtual images so much of the time on a plastic screen?
Well, Mr. Lesh, we certainly appreciate your visit and making this book available. It is certainly a need. And the book is entitled Intelligence in the Digital Age, How the Search for Something Larger May Be Imperiled. Where can listeners get more information on yourself and also pick up the book?
LynnLesh.com. They can get the book on Amazon. They can get the book from my publisher, Roman and Littlefield, or they can get it from any of the other book services.
And of course, we certainly do appreciate that. Sounds quite convenient as well. Again, Mr. Lesh, all the best, and thanks for being a part of our programming here on Enterprise Radio.
Okay, take care.
Again, we've been speaking with Lynn Lesh, the author of his newest book, Intelligence in the Digital Age, How the Search for Something Larger May Be Imperiled. And for all the details, visit LynnLesh.com. And this is Eric Dye, and you've been listening to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Tune into our live location as we are streaming live 24/7 around the world at epodcastnetwork.com/live. You can also find our live stream on iTunes Radio and TuneIn Radio, as well as the TuneIn Radio app for your listening convenience. And as always, we thank you for your support and for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to Enterprise Radio. To subscribe to more of our programming, visit epodcastnetwork.com. We'll be right back.
This is the ePodcast Network.